Hey, welcome your Thursday as we warm up for a huge college football weekend. Tide will be traveling down to South Florida. Auburn will be hosting Samford. But guys, I'm going to have to lead the above the fold top headline story. Atlanta Braves beat Philadelphia last night 4-1. They have clinched their sixth consecutive division title. This is an amazing baseball team. Last night in Philadelphia, Spencer Strider, 17 Ks, a record for a guy that throws nothing but heat anyway. Fantastic pitcher. So Atlanta right now is 96-50. Do the math. That's 46 games over 500. They ran away with the division. And here's the stat I just read online a minute ago. That is Atlanta's 26th division title since they broke off into divisions, highest in Major League Baseball. So kudos to the Braves, you guys. You know, I know I am a homer. I have been since the hammer. But I just congratulations to the Atlanta Braves. I think I speak for a lot of us that have just been in the Atlanta fold for years and years and years. You just got to believe that this is just the beginning because this is the best team in baseball. Lars, don't you think there's a lot of pressure on them to go ahead and win it all? If they don't, is this season a failure? I think it is. They got to win it all.
Well, they certainly have the talent, and you're the baseball expert here. What is it about this Braves team that's so special? Is it just the combination of having elite pitching and elite hitting? Is it the manager just pulling the right strings all the time? What is it?
You don't have to be a stat head to realize why this team is so good, and it's the long ball. I mean, Braves love the long ball. They're setting all types of not just team records, but individual records in hitting home runs. I mean, they almost hit 300 home runs this year. Justin Riley had one last night, a two-run that gave him enough of a lead to beat Philadelphia. But you mentioned something else, which I think is very observant on your part, about the manager. Snit has had to really manage his starting rotation. I mean, Max Fried's been hurt. They've got several other starters that they had to move up and down from Gwinnett, Triple-A. And then his bullpen, he's had to shuffle those cards as well. So I would say first and foremost, it's that the Braves can overpower anybody and literally any pitcher they've faced. So it's the power. And then I just continue to marvel at the work that Snit does in the dugout. He's a great manager of the game of baseball and even a greater manager of the players in baseball. So there you have my perspective, and congratulations to my Bravos. Now let's finish out the season, try not to get anybody hurt, and then go into the playoffs with a mat on.
Matt's switching to college football in a story that doesn't involve anyone in this state. My favorite head coach this weekend is Jay Norvell, who is the head coach at Colorado State. I've gotten to know Jay pretty well over the years. He's a college football lifer, and he's just had different jobs all around the country, including a stint at Nebraska. And I've always just had the utmost respect for Jay. And this weekend on Saturday is the Rocky Mountain Showdown between Colorado and Colorado State. Obviously, these two teams do not care for one another. And Jay Norvell, I love him, I love him, I love him. He had a sit down with ESPN, right, in front of the game this weekend. You know, they do all the interviews with separate different players and coaches. And he said, and then he was recounting his interaction with ESPN on his coach's show last night. And he said, "I sat down with ESPN today, and I don't care if they hear this in Boulder or not. I told them I took my hat off and I took my glasses off. And I said, when I talk to grownups, I take my hat off and I take my glasses off. That's what my mother taught me." And that was a complete dig at Deion Sanders, because you know what? When he does his interviews, his sunglasses, his hat, and
even a hoodie
during his press conferences and media appearances. And then he went on to say, this is even better. They're not going to like us no matter what we say or do. It doesn't matter. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's go up there and play. That's just how I feel about it. I don't mean to take over the show, but I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of all that stuff, and I know everybody else is too, so let's go play. And so clearly what he is saying is, I'm tired of the fact that these guys just lie. They lie about being disrespected. They lie about what coaches have said about them. They lie about what other players have said about them. They manufacture this BS to get this sort of self-motivation, us against the world mentality, and it has gotten to the point of utter ridiculousness. And again, I've said, you know, in politics and in life and in sports now, apparently, we are in a post-fact age. Facts don't matter anymore. They just don't. And Deion Sanders is example 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 to me right now. And it just drives me nuts as a writer and just as a fan in general. I just don't appreciate people exaggerating and flat out misrepresenting other people's comments. Jay Norvell's calling him out on it, and I love it.
And you're so right in using that as a mirror of the way things are, particularly in our media today. I mean, you know, that they make things up. They twist things around just
on both sides of the aisle. Yes. In politics, too. Both sides in media and politics and everything.
You know, I think the Deion Sanders story was big and intriguing, and we were all watching. But I agree with Norvell 1,000%. It's old. It's tired. Go play football, win or lose. Take your hat and your glasses off. Talk to people and move on. It's another reason why.
It's a sign of respect. Why do you think golfers always take their hat off on the 18th hole and shake the hand of the guys they played with? Because it's respect. You know, and why does everybody take their hat off? I mean, especially in the South here, right? We show great respect.
You don't go inside with one.
You don't go inside. You don't wear your sunglasses inside. You know, it's just nonsense.
Lars, they claim to get no respect, yet they offer none.
Right.
I'm going to quote myself on that.
That's a good one.
Anyway, I appreciate you bringing that up because I'm tired of it. And I honestly think that it's actions like this that will hurt. I don't know many SEC teams that would take him because of the way he acts. You know, we kind of act and show respect and do things a little bit different than the Southeastern Conference. That is to say, I mean, if Lane Kiffin were to go somewhere else, I think there would be a call to Boulder. So, anyway, we'll see. Doesn't it? It's gotten to the point now. I never pulled for Nebraska harder than I did last week.
And now I'm pulling for Colorado State. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? I think a lot of people feel this way now that didn't feel this way 2 weeks ago. Am I right?
No, I think you're 100% right. I mean, it's just what these guys are doing is just so over the top, out of line. They are being disrespectful, and they are, again, not being truthful at all.
What? Just like Norvell said, he's tired of it. He doesn't care what they say.
Yeah.
Neither does Colorado.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see if Deion Sanders responds to this before the game.
Oh, you know he will.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
And it won't be very respectful either.
No.
My prediction on that. Maybe I'm wrong. All right. We need to talk about Alabama's offensive line. So I go to our offensive line guy, and that's the one and only Roger Schultz. Played center for Alabama, started 4 straight years. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, Roger Schultz, baby, will be our guest in a moment on Big Noon Sports.
Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa. Located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
365, 24/7. You'll find road and utility crews, tow truck, law enforcement, and first responders working along Alabama's roadway.
We're making improvements and helping our communities stay connected.
We're working hard to make sure you're safe on the road. Now we need your help to make sure we're safe too.
Alabama's move over law requires you to move over a lane when you see flashing lights on the roadside. And if you can't safely move over, please slow down.
Visit drivesafealabama.org, brought to you by the Alabama Department of Transportation, Alabama Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Just a small chance of a shower this afternoon, otherwise partially sunny, the high 85. Tonight fair with a low at 66. For tomorrow and Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds both days with scattered showers around. Highs between 84 and 87. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 79 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
It is indeed Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, Justin. Hey, I want to take a minute here while we get Schultze online and remind everybody, Lars, where we're going to be tomorrow from noon until 2 and every Friday throughout the Alabama football season. We will be at Innisfree right there on University Boulevard. Tremendous burgers and chicken sandwiches and chicken wraps. And, oh, last week, Laura Lee ordered fried pickles that just dazzled. So please come by, join us, ask a question, get involved, sit back, have one of their 40-plus beers on tap, and enjoy an afternoon. Alabama it's going to be out of town, but fans are still going to rally in Tuscaloosa. So
yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Matt, noon to 2 tomorrow.
I just had to bring this up because I know that I don't think you're going to be around in the second hour when we do our picks with Reagan. Last week, Matt, 0-4 for you.
Yeah.
0-4.
I think I went 4-0 to 0-4. So, hey,
you know
what? I picked like Alabama plays.
I was 1-3, and Reagan was 2-2. So, yeah. So,
that was a rough one. It's all about even now.
You're 4-4. I am 4-4, and Reagan is 4-4. So yeah, we're even through 2 weeks, picking against the spread, and maybe next segment we can pick the games, or I can tell you what the games are, and you can give me your thoughts. But I think you, well, no, you didn't see it on the text thread, but yeah. Are there any games? This is not a great weekend slate of games, Matt. And next week is amazing. I don't know. Is there any games that really intrigue you? I mean, I'm intrigued by the Alabama game, frankly, because of just how they're gonna, how they're gonna bounce back and sort of what we see just from the quarterback position. I'm also intrigued, obviously, with that Colorado State game. It's not terrific. Duke, they're at number 21. They're looking to go to 3-0, and they host Northwestern. And Northwestern, again, is a team that's absolutely been gutted due to the hazing scandal. You got Florida State traveling to Boston College. Texas hosts Wyoming. Penn State opens Big Ten play at Illinois, but Illinois is really down this year. Miami going against Bethune-Cookman. I mean, there's just it's weird. You know, you look forward to the season, and you kind of just wish that some of the good games would be spread out And this week, it's just a bunch of duds,
well,
unfortunately.
Well, I'm not necessarily, yeah, but there are some games in the Southeastern Conference of great note. LSU is at Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And,
yep,
and
yeah.
Tennessee, how about Tennessee at Florida?
Tennessee,
the
Florida.
Gators have a chance. There are a couple of games, but right now, Roger Schultz, former Alabama offensive lineman center, is going to join us. Roger, it's Matt and Lars. How are you?
Hey, that's the same people that were together last time I talked to you.
Imagine that. We haven't divorced yet.
We got a pair.
Yeah, that's unbelievable for Matt. I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could go in a lot of directions on that one.
Well, yeah, a lot of people could. The ones that I refused to accept and the ones that just left. But that is a story for our Saturday show, which doesn't exist. But Roger was my partner. How many years did we do the show with Terry Henley? Six, seven?
Yeah, a long time. I tell you what, we did it till I started two teams. I started the trenches, and we were still doing two team teaser, and that was about 2093, about 7 years.
Yeah, we had a good time, and that was a very good show. We got good numbers on it.
Yeah.
But anyway, hey, Roger. Everybody was just all fired up about Alabama's offensive line, their weight, their size, their meanness and toughness. And there was Latham that said, we're going to make people want to quit. Man, I guess just to point blank the question.
Well, hey.
What happened?
Hey, well, I guess he was right because all these Alabama fans have quit. They're about to jump off the bridge because the line's so bad. So. I guess in essence it did work. I guess that's one of the things that obviously they have to fix. I think there's a couple. I don't think they necessarily have the right five guys in there, the right combination of guys. I know, through spring and through the summer and through a couple of the practices before the last scrimmage, you know, that Ferguson was the guy that everybody was talking about at guard. He was playing that left guard and, you know, Booker was at right guard. Everything seemed to be fine, but then they had to find a place for Doubtcourt and he's kind of struggled a little bit. I know the freshman struggled a little bit, but he is a freshman. He played high school football in Iowa. He's probably I'll give him a pass. They got to get better. But the defense, you know, nobody's talking really about the defensive line, but I mean, they didn't do much against Texas either. I mean, you know, so there's some issues they got to work on, but hey, everything's fixable.
What were the biggest issues that you saw, just from a sort of a technical standpoint, with the Alabama?
Well, I can tell you this. I saw Doubtcourt not help. One time there was a guy kind of shedded the center to the left side. He jumped from one A gap to the other A gap, which is a hard block for the center, right? And the guard had Doubtcourt had opportunity to, we call it getting a McRib. That's when you just knock him in the rib, get a McRib sandwich, and he just like just what. Kicked. I was like, what are you, hit somebody, man. I mean, then he started looking downfield to go hit a safety, and it was a pass. I'm like, dude, you got it. When you get a chance to get a McRib. I mean, you got to lay a dude out. And there was a couple of those plays. He didn't play very well, but that's just, I went back and watched the film. And but he's a six-year guy, and I understand why Saban has him in there. But, you know, another thing I've kind of noticed too is, you know, there's a lot of guys that have left in the transfer portal, offensive linemen that, you know, highly recruited guys like that Brockenmeyer kid, you know, the guy that's starting at right tackle with George that left, that's playing right tackle at Florida. And, you know, how Saban always brags about, you know, competing in practice, like, you know, the hardest competition is in practice for your job. And man, I don't know if they got 10 guys that can play. I think they got probably seven, but we've only seen five. And, you know, I always just wonder why Saban didn't jerk some. I mean, Saban usually jerked somebody out of there, you know. And the thing was, the center flinched two or three times and had a couple bad snaps. And I guess, you know, Doubtcourt would be the other center. And, but I guess, it's all fixable, you know. And I think Texas is Texas is a pretty good team. I think a lot of people just are acting like they're North Texas. They're not North Texas. They're pretty good. That's a pretty good football team.
Did you ever have to, I should remember this, Roger. Did you snap much shotgun?
Oh yeah. Hey, we played Miami in the Sugar Bowl, and we were shotgun snapped the whole time because I had to go against Russell Maryland and Cortez Kennedy, two number one draft picks on my shoulders. So, and if we weren't in shotgun, they'd have made about 1,000 sacks. So I'm just saying, it was a good thing we were in shotgun, because I sure wasn't blocking them. But
why
don't tell anybody.
Why do we see, Roger, why do we see the mistakes with snaps? And it's not just Alabama. A lot of teams do, and it just I would think, Roger, I would think after a while, and you practice it every day, it would just be innate, you know? It would just be,
it
you know,
should,
it muscle memory?
It should be. I mean, but people do, like, they do the dead snap now, you know, the claw snap where, you know, and some do it like where they hold it like a pass and snap it. You know, everybody's a little different. To whatever the comfortable center, but whatever the center's comfortable doing, but what got him was it wasn't, you know, Torrey had some bad, he had some snaps that were a little low, which is sometimes, but I think too, when you're getting your butt kicked and you feel like you ain't got no help and you gotta change, you know, you gotta do something, it changes how you snap, right? Because now you gotta maybe snap a little quicker or something, you know. I can always remember if we ever had to run a sweep, that was always a hard, because we'd be under center and we'd run a sweep, but the quarterback had to ride me longer because I'm having to reach a long way and then he's rolling out, he's turning out the other way. So, you know, I had a fumble snap at the Vanderbilt game and they pulled me out because of it. I mean, but it was a hard block, but and sometimes I think those centers start thinking, hey, I got help, and they flinch. And he flinched, you know, they had two flinches besides the bad snap. So, you know, he had snap, like you used to call those snapping fractures. But
Roger, just looking at the game as a whole, what was most surprising to you about Alabama's performance?
I guess, obviously, I think the line of scrimmage, I thought we would be better at the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. And I knew Texas was good. I didn't know that they were going to be that good. But it was pretty impressive how they pretty much handled things. And, you know, they didn't run for a whole lot of yards. But, by gosh, when they had to just lay the hammer down and just paper cut you and run out the clock, they did it, you know, 2 yards in a cloud of dust. And they got it done. And that kind of takes your manhood. I was surprised, a little surprised by that, but I was a little surprised by it. I thought they would have more like designed quarterback runs. I mean, they ran a couple draws, and there was a couple little, you know, reads that where Milroe should have handed the ball off, but he didn't. He kept it, and that didn't help. But there wasn't a whole lot of, it looked like designed quarterback plays. It didn't seem that way to me, runs. And I mean, if they talk about that's one of Milroe's strengths is his running ability, you thought they'd have had a few more design running plays. But that's kind of what surprised me a little bit more. But I thought the receivers played well. You got to get them the ball, but both those guys did good. You know, but like I said, I think the line of scrimmage kind of surprised me a little bit. But, and at the end of the day, I know Alabama lost by 10, and everybody talk about saving double digits. I mean, it's literally 1 point into double digits. You know, double digits could go all the way to 99. You know, so they got, you know, they paint the picture like, oh, double digits. Well, it was 10 points. I mean, yeah, it's not what we're accustomed to or used to, or Saban is accustomed to or used to, but it's not like, you know, we didn't get blown out. But I think the thing that's bad is the battle, the line of scrimmage. And then once Alabama went ahead, you know, usually teams fold. And Texas, man, they didn't fold. They answered back with a haymaker. And I think that kind of surprised Alabama a little bit, and we didn't really respond well after that, and that's kind of what surprised me a little bit.
Roger, much was made out of Alabama having three offensive linemen at 350. Can you be too big? Because these guys have good feet too. That confuses me.
No, that's the first thing. Look, that's the first thing I said in the Middle Tennessee game. I said they're way too big. Why in the world are they? Look at the NFL. The NFL guys are not that. They're lean. You know, I think McLaughlin's a good center, but I think he kind of put on to that. They'll get that weight. I think they'll get that weight off of. As the season progresses, I think you'll see him getting a little bit better shape. But I mean, first of all, Caden Proctor's just a big dude. I mean, that is a big guy. But, you know, they talk about Otis, right? Who started off at 415 or 418, and now he's down to 308. look how he's playing. I mean, he's really moving around. And but yeah, sometimes I think you get too big. I mean, and I definitely think that was the case. That's what I said after the first week. Before the Texas game, that was all I was saying. I was like, man, they're just too fast. And he goes, oh, no, look how they dominated. I go, well, pump the brakes, Middle Tennessee. And secondly, they're way too heavy. I mean, you know, and I think that does make a difference. But that's an easy fix. They can lose, they can get down. You know, if it was all good weight, that's different. You know, if it's all muscle weight, that's a different thing. But I don't think it was all muscle weight.
Roger, we've been talking about this quite a bit this week, mainly because this death of the dynasty narrative has been prominent in the national media this week. But the thing is that if you just look at the raw statistics, you know, there's some troubling trends. In Alabama's last 19 games against Power 5 opponents, they've lost 5 times. And you look at the previous 50 games against those same Power 5 opponents, Alabama's lost, they've lost 5 times. So they've lost as many games to Power 5 in the last 19 games as the previous 50. Do you have an opinion as to what's going on with the program and just big picture wise? And, you know, is there a reason for the fact that Alabama has, you know, it clearly come back down from being just head and shoulders the preeminent program in college football?
Well, I mean, obviously it's hard to it's hard to maintain. And every coach, you know, wins a national championship, goes on. Look, I don't think the dynasty's dead. I understand the trend. And sometimes it's a little frustrating, but I think what's happened is they've recruited at a high level, but those are rankings, right? You got to be able to develop players. Some of it might fall on, and Saban's had to replace a bunch of coaches, and maybe he doesn't have the best coaches in the world. I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe they're not developing guys like they used to develop guys, and maybe that's a part of it. But Saban. It's eventually going to catch up when you keep losing coaches, you got to keep replacing coaches. And then now you get all these kids that get in the transfer portal that aren't starting and want to play and go somewhere else to play. And now all of a sudden that hurts your depth, right? Now you have supposedly guys that, that's the one thing Saban always bragged about is the hardest competition's in practice. Between the ones and twos, they're fighting for their position. Well, now I don't necessarily know they got that. I don't think, you kind of go on with what you got. Because I would think that they would replace some of those, a couple of them offensive linemen. They kept the same group in there the whole time. But, like I said, I don't know. I still don't think the dynasty's dead. I think once Saban's there, I think everybody just needs to pump their brakes. I think we ran into a pretty good Texas team, that's done things, starts kind of moved them in the right direction. But, yeah, I mean, those are some trends that I guess you got to keep looking at. But, they were going to step back a little bit, but they're still elite. They still got great players. They still got a good roster. There's not a coach in the country that wouldn't probably trade spots with Saban. Maybe except for, Kirby Smart, I guess what Norvell's doing down in Florida State, but I think everybody would trade with Saban with the talent that he's got. But I think it might be time to get a new, maybe if you don't buy into Saban's offense, you got to have an offense coordinator do his own offense.
Hey, Roger, I'm not out of questions, and neither is Lars. Are you out of time? Can you hang on another 10 minutes?
Yeah, if you're okay, if you can hear me, I'm on the road traveling, so I'm good as long as you're good.
No, you sound great, and will continue to sound great. On the other side of this break, as you listen to Big Noon Sport.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker who's as roll-tied as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Our guest is Roger Schultz. Roger, I wanted to ask you this when we were talking about lineman size. What was your playing weight?
260.
So these guys are weighing 100 pounds more than you.
Yeah. I guarantee you they weren't 100 pounds stronger than me in the bench press of the squad. I can promise you that. But I could move a little bit better than they could.
It seems incredible, the size. And I keep thinking it's going to peak out, but they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Hey, you made comment about Alabama's defensive line versus Texas. Could you expand on that just a little bit? Because they kind of got whooped, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, where was the pass rush? Where was the pressure? I don't know, Malachi Moore said something about maybe we ought to blitz for it. You know, they neutralized Dallas Turner. Those, I'm telling you, man, those tackles, you go back and watch that film, those tackles for Texas are really, really good. I mean, really good. So, because, I mean, even, you know, when Will Anderson was doing well, that opened up for Dallas Turner. So if Dallas Turner's getting blocked, double team or chip, there's got to be somebody available, right? I mean, I was just kind of surprised by the defensive line. You know, I just, it's a line of scrimmage game, but Tech, I give, you know, Tech credit building that offensive line, and they've done a, you know, they got a couple new guys in there, but those tackles played really, really well.
Roger, the sky hasn't fallen yet on Alabama's season. Everything they want to accomplish is still very much within their grasp. All they need to do now is win out. They don't have any more margin for error. But so this weekend, traveling to South Florida, which is a really odd place to be going to for this Alabama team. But is going on the road almost good medicine for a team that has just suffered a really difficult home loss? Just for the basic things like bonding with one another and, you know, getting on the plane and just spending a lot of time with one another as teammates.
Yeah, well, I think what they need to do, I think they all just need to get in a fist fight, get mad, play a little pissed off. That might help. But no, I think it's a good thing to get kind of get out. And I mean, and South Florida's not a very good team. I know they beat, I mean, Western Kentucky beat them, and then they lost. Then they beat Florida A&M, and I mean, they only beat Florida A&M by 10 points or some. I mean, not very, 14 points, I think. It's a good game to kind of get everybody right, to see what happens, see what kind of adjustments we make. Because all those things, I mean. I know everybody wants to panic and not everybody, you know, I mean, the rivers are full of Bama fans. They're all jumping off the bridge, but they, you know, but it's not panic. I still trust they're going to fix it. And I mean, he's won a bunch of national championships with one loss. I wouldn't push the panic button just yet. You know, obviously you want to see marked improvement. You want to see things just get a little bit better in the South Florida game, which they should. It's going to be interesting, too, what they do at the quarterback position. You know, is Milroe still the guy, or is Tyler Buckner going to be the guy, or Ty Simpson? Who's the guy? I mean, obviously I think probably a couple of the quarterbacks will play this weekend. And but it'll be interesting. But everything's fixed. Well, obviously we need a – be nice to have a nice dominating win. I mean, if we beat South Florida by, you know, 7 points, that might be, you know, crank up the suicide hotline. But but I think we'll be all right.
Roger, I'm going to dive away from this. Let's talk about something fun. We're talking about flights, team flights, charter flights. What are their probably 100 people in the traveling entourage, something like that. That's really not my point. What do they feed you when you're on a long flight?
When you go to see your seat, you sit down, they've already got like a couple sandwiches, a candy bar, chips, a cookie, and it's in a bag sitting in the seat. So that's basically it. They don't let you drink a whole lot of Coke or anything like that. You got to drink Gatorade or water, but that's what they, I mean, it's nothing fancy. I mean, it's just they'll either give you it was always sitting in our seat. And, it was like always a couple sandwiches and, for some reason, Butterfinger. I don't know why Butterfinger was always in there, but Butterfinger. But that's what we always had. And I mean, if it was a longer flight, I don't recall. I mean, I know we had a snack and maybe you had, maybe they told you, bring, I can't remember. It's not like they go down the aisle and go, hey, would you like to purchase some peanuts? I mean, that doesn't happen, but.
Roger,
guys, I can't remember on long flight. You know, we went to Phoenix, but I can't remember. I know they gave us food to start. I don't know if they gave us something in the middle or heck, I don't remember.
Roger, if you're at a dinner party and somebody asks you, hey, tell us your favorite travel story, whether it was like a prank that somebody played or just, somebody who maybe was terrified of flying. Do you have one in your arsenal, an anecdote that you can whip out?
Well, I know it was always fun to take the first flight with freshmen that have never been on flight. That was always fun. We always make fun of them and we go, there was always that. So the guy that had never flown, there's always, that guy was always going to get picked on. It didn't matter, and there's always one or two at the first of the season. But I tell you, a thing that we, not a very good thing, but one or two guys would always have a little bottle of liquor. But when we fly back, we would be enjoying the, a little alcoholic drink on the plane. But hopefully the coaches wouldn't walk back and want to see us. But that was always fun, to take a part in the spirits. And by the time we got landed in Tuscaloosa, we'd already done our pre-gaming and we were ready to go. So
who that was the always, coach? Who was so the head coach?
Ready to go.
When you...
it was all the head coaches. all of them.
Yeah. Because you played under three? Is
under
that
three,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Perkins, Curry, and Stalling, and they kind of... Yeah, it started smelling like Bourbon Street, on some flights.
Wow.
You're like, good God. I said, God, I did not participate in that, by the way. I did not at all. And I'd go, God, could y'all just pump the brakes a little bit on it? But no. But that's all. We always have to make fun of the new guy.
Roger, it's always a blast. Roll Tide. Appreciate you joining us. And let's do it again in a week or so, all right?
Yeah, we'll do it. Hey, Bama fans, man, we're going to be all right. We're going to be all right.
So. The voice of wisdom from the one and only Roger Schultz. Thank you, Roger. We'll be back and conclude the first hour of Big Noon Sports.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Thursday edition of The Game, we'll feature Rodney Orr, TiderInsider.com, Bruce Marshall, Vegas Handicapper, Brad Powers, BradPowersSports.com, and we will continue our Dreamland School Prediction Day here on The Game, starting at 2 on Tide 100.9, the home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Just a small chance of a shower this afternoon, otherwise partially sunny, the high 85. Tonight fair with a low at 66. For tomorrow and Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds both days with scattered showers around. Highs between 84 and 87. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 78 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, top of the hour, the one, the only. Tim Brando will join. One mention, and then I'm going to give you some picks for this weekend, and everybody needs to lock this in because I am a solid 4-4 against the spread this year. quote from Aaron Rodgers, I shall rise yet again. That sounds very Cal Berkeley to me.
Yeah,
but I believe it. I don't think he's going to, he's not going to go out that way. And you agree, don't you?
Yeah, I think he's going to try to come back. Got to remember that there was all of one team that was interested in Aaron Rodgers in this offseason, and that was the Jets. No other team wanted to deal with the Packers when it came to Aaron Rodgers, maybe because the asking price was so high. And by the way, that asking price, we all thought it was going to be a first-round pick next year, but Aaron had to play in 70% of the snaps for the Packers to get that first-round pick, and now he's not going to do that. That goes to a second-round pick. So, you know, it's going to be a 40-year-old quarterback coming off a significant injury. Again, playing with an offensive line that, as we saw on Monday night, is really got a lot of work to do. Who knows what they'll look like next year. But, you know, of course he's going to say that. He's not going to say, yeah, I'm throwing in the towel, I'm retiring. I mean, of course he's going to come out and, you know, imply – not say directly, but imply that he's going to come back. I know personally the grueling rehab that he's about ready to face. And I get it. His situation is a lot different than mine, but, fortunately when I was rehabbing, I had a lot of free time. And so I was doing 3 hours a day over at Andrews in the rehab clinic. And I'm still not 100%, like 6 years later, nor will I ever be. But it just changes you, in not the best way, in your athleticism and your, just your abilities and your quickness. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And, I'm not sold on him coming back. We'll see. Okay. Well, let's dig into, the games that Reagan and, you and I are picking this week. And since you got to run, we'll just get your pick. All right. Tennessee at Florida. Tennessee is a 6.5 favorite.
Florida hadn't shown me enough to think they can cover. It's at home. It's all that. I like Billy Napier. But I'm taking Tennessee. It's what did you say? Six? I got six
and a half.
I'm taking Tennessee. Joe Milton. Whoa.
Yeah, he's an NFL player. Okay, Georgia is hosting South Carolina, and Georgia is a 27.5 point home favorite.
And that seems so steep to me. Georgia hadn't been full throttle for the first couple of games, but, you know, they don't have to play full throttle as good and as deep and well coached as they are. And, actually, Lars, I think South Carolina might have been just a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah.
But that's just too much. This is an SEC game. I realize that, it is in Athens, but I'll take South Carolina just because you like their coach.
Yeah, I'm going to be with you on that one. Also, Carson Beck has looked really good.
Yeah,
in my view, for Georgia. And like I said, I know Stetson Bennett won back-to-back national titles, but they may have upgraded the quarterback position.
He made corner throws in the first couple of games. That's NFL.
NFL. Yeah. Okay, LSU at Mississippi State. LSU is a 9.5 point favorite.
That's an interesting game, but I'll tell you what, I'm not going to sit here and claim that I have watched every single snap of Mississippi State. I've seen some of them. They have won a couple of games, but they have had to rely on penalties and turnovers and mistakes by the other team, particularly in the Arizona game, to win those games. I'm going with the Bengal Tigers of Louisiana State University.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be with you on that one, too. All right, the final pick is Alabama at South Florida. Alabama, the latest I've seen, they're 33-point favorites.
All right. I'm kind of checking through mine here to see what they say, and I thought it was 33 or something like that.
Yeah, 33.
I've got 33. Okay. South Florida isn't as good as Middle Tennessee State University. As Rogers stated, they struggled with the Rattlers of Florida A&M. Plus, Alabama's in rebound, punch-out mode. I'm taking the Crimson Tide, 54-10.
Yeah, okay, I'll give my thoughts on that, too, later.
Yeah, but, talk to Reagan about that.
But I did see that, you know, Nick Saban is doing a weekly segment with Pat McAfee on the Pat McAfee show. Yeah, do you get any – I mean, a lot of people have looked into this who have – or a lot of people have speculated that, hey, it's Nick Saban – you know, just getting ready for his post-coaching career and playing footsie with the media and going on this new really high-profile show. I don't necessarily buy that, but one interesting thing he said, and this was just maybe an hour or so ago, that he felt that his team played with, quote, too much anxiety. And anxiety is the quote. And that's a word that he has used quite a bit in the last 2 years. And, you know, he thinks that, it's very simple that they've deviated from the process. They're not focusing on each play, on their assignment on each play. They're too worried about outcome. And once you worry about outcome and the bigger picture, that's when you start to make mental errors. You make mental errors, that causes anxiety. Anxiety causes you to make more mental errors, and it's a snowball effect. I think that to me is very sort of cogent, insightful analysis from Coach Saban, and very, very honest about what happened on Saturday night in Bryant Denny.
Why would he agree to do that?
I don't
puzzling.
Know.
It seems like those two just don't match up culturally. And I'm sorry. I know that his podcast.
It's a really big. Popular, it's a big. It's a big. It's a very big platform.
Yeah, it's a large audience.
And
but I just,
a lot of younger people really love Pat McAfee, and
that's why he's on sports. That's why he's on Game Day, right?
Yeah,
I think he's crude. But, you know, that's my generation. Yeah. The younger generations, you know, they like the in-your-face stuff. Guy wears a muscle shirt to do Game Day? Huh?
Justin, what do you think of Pat McAfee? Justin.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Justin, what do you think of Pat McAfee?
I like Pat McAfee. I think he's I think he's funny. I enjoy it.
Yep. Yeah, I do, too. It was awesome. When he got
bombs on Game Day.
Did you see him, like, get the Alabama crowd all going when he was yelling, Ala, and they all yelled Bama, and he did the roll?
Oh,
it was cool. It was a cool moment.
And I was there that morning when Game Day started on Saturday, and he was doing it then, too. It was great.
Yeah, it was.
It's a cultural thing. Then.
He had the crowd in the palm of his hand.
I'll say, Matt, he wears a muscle shirt for his show, but he does put on a suit and stuff for Game Day.
Oh, I saw him on the set doing something in one. Maybe it was a warm up or a pregame to the pregame
They did his show on the Game Day set
Friday. You know, I think it's a cultural thing. My generation doesn't like that kind of stuff, and. Of course, you know, I throw kids out of my front yard daily. So, I'm kidding so much. But I do think, and you were spot on, Lars, for asking somebody, you know, of the immediate generation. What do they call you guys, Justin? Are you Generation C or X or D?
Well, I'm Generation X.
You are?
Who are you, okay. Justin? Yeah.
I'm a Gen Z. I think I'm a millennial. I'm 2000, baby, so I don't know.
Oh, I think you're below. Millennials are older than you, I think.
But, gosh, you are one.
I'm a baby boomer. Jeez. Proud of it. All right. Tim Brando is coming up next on Big Noon Sports.
free.
A Town Square Media Station. WTUG HD2 Northport. And W265 CG Tuscaloosa. Tide 100.9. And streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From T-Town to the plane, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Welcome back in to Hour 2, Big Noon Sports. We have the one and the only Timmy B, Tim Brando. How are you doing today, my friend?
Wonderful, Lars. Good to be with you.
How, give us your experience last week and any fun travel stories.
Well, USC has really improved defensively. That's bad news for everybody that's got them on their schedule coming up. They've got a defensive front now. One particular player that was very impressive, which enables their linebackers to make some great plays, and they did. Stanford was outmanned and outclassed. So you could say that we still have some questions about just how good they are, and we may not know until, you know, they do play Arizona State in a week from Saturday at Arizona State, which will be somewhat of a test. Turns out that is the game that Spencer and I will have among back-to-back affairs. Fox has us headed to Purdue for Wisconsin on Friday night. Then we're going to fly overnight to the desert and do a little Pac-12 after dark again a week from Saturday. So two games for us next week. But USC, when they get to that point where they play, say, Colorado, oh, my God, I can't even tell you how crazy that game might be. With I think right now the two hottest quarterbacks in the country, Deion Sanshador and Caleb Williams, they are, they're fantastic players. So that could be an incredible game coming up. But I was impressed by what I saw. My travel actually went very smoothly. So I'm happy to report that I was able to get home in pretty good shape and am ready to hit the road this week. A little bit of a home feel to this one, only having to drive about 3.5 hours to Houston, which I'll do shortly after I get off the phone with you.
Do you prefer that, just being able to drive and sort of be in control of your own destiny rather than getting on an airplane?
Any opportunity I have to drive, I'll do it. If it's 9 hours or fewer, it's an automatic. Once you get into that double digit hour thing.
My magic number was always about six and a half.
I'm a guy that grew up traveling with my dad and his band, and we used to drive, my goodness, all over the place in those days with a couple of vans with musicians. So I was sort of raised on getting in as Chris Farley coined the phrase, a van down by the river and keep on going, you know, when I was a child. So I love it. I find it cathartic. Turn on Sirius XM and if I'm in the mood to listen to some sports, I will. If I'm in the mood to hear some great music, I'll do that. So, and of course, anytime I'm this close to home, I can take my wife with me. You know, we're empty nesters with grandkids now, so she gets to come with me, and that's always fun.
So your dad was a performer. Did that kind of inspire you to want to be on the public stage, so to speak?
I don't remember not being in front of people. I mean, he put me on a stage with Brando and the Dreamers when I was 5 years old. I was on television when I was 5 years old. Part of the act, you know, singing with my dad. My sister was pantomiming Teresa Brewer songs and dancing, jazz dancing with the band. We were a floor show band, and we toured SAC air bases all across the globe. And, you know, we got on airplanes and flew. You know, I was looking at the path of this hurricane that's headed to Bermuda. We played the St. George Hotel in Bermuda when I was 7 years old. I'll never forget watching the sun rise over a gazebo in the front of the St. George's Hotel while my father's band and I was a part of it were still up playing music long after the set was supposed to be over. So
you know, SAC air bases were always located at these locations in places like Harmon, Newfoundland, and Goose Bay, Labrador, the Azores Islands, which is where my family is from. I'm of Portuguese descent. So, yeah, I was seeing the world. It was a little bit like being an Air Force brat. You know, you hear stories about kids that grew up with fathers that were in the military. Until I was about 10 years old, between, you know, birth and age 10 or 11, that's kind of life I was leading. And then all of a sudden, Dad got out of it, and I had to be a sort of a normal kid. And it really was a good time to become a normal kid, playing sports. But, you know, my dreams of being in front of people and being a broadcaster were always cemented. I always knew that's what I wanted to do.
That's really interesting. So even at like 8, 9 years old, you knew in a sense of what you wanted to do. And I asked that because my son is 8, and I'm just wondering if things are percolating in his head about, you know, hey, you know, seeing my dad do this or my mom do this, like, you know, this could really be something I want to do. And just the mm-hmm. influence that your dad had on you and that sort of lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. The world was to be conquered. You know, that was the feeling I had. And at a time when, you know, most kids that grew up with fathers of the World War II generation that, you know, had a hard time telling their kids how much they loved them, my dad was just the opposite. He was very encouraging. You know, he was telling people on the bandstand, here's the most, you know, the audience, after I came out and did this little comedic bit to join him on stage, wearing a tuxedo that matched his and the rest of the band's. I mean, I looked like a midget, you know, a band member is what I looked like. That was sort of part of the act. And, I mean, after we got done, he put me on the drums and Dad would say, there's the best 6-year-old drummer in the world. And I believed it, you know, and so you can be the best, at anything you do. That's what he preached. And, he said, I told him I didn't want to do what he did. I was enamored with guys like Kurt Gowdy and Ray Scott and, Jim Simpson and Chris Schenkel and all these great broadcasters doing college football, Keith Jackson. And I told him that's what I want to do. And he said, well, you start concentrating on just that and you can be the best. And so,
go ahead.
No. We worked a high school football game together in 1971. I was 14, had not turned 15 yet. And, you know, Dad told me after the first game, he said, you're the best 14-year-old broadcaster probably in the world. And he said, so your goal should be to be the best you can be the best there is of your generation when you're 44, you know, and 54. and, you know, that kind of encouragement, was something I took with me through all the ups and downs, and you're going to have them. Everybody's going to have a roller coaster ride in life, things that you don't have control over. But I was able to maintain, I think, a level of confidence through whatever difficult times were going to be there because of the way I was raised.
You know, I talk to my students a lot about rhythm and cadence and beats in your writing. And the fact that you developed a musical ear at a young age, do you think that helped you with your projection and just your speech pattern as a broadcaster?
Yeah, I think, and one of the great compliments that Spencer and I get from, you know, not just, it's always wonderful to hear from the fans. I mean, it is, especially those that are objective, maybe don't have a dog in the hunt with the game, but they're just listening to the game and watching the game objectively. I'll hear from them, but I also hear from my peers, that they're envious of the chemistry that Spencer Tillman and I have. And, you know, that's a magical thing. And it doesn't always happen, quite that easily, but once it does and you two, are on the same page and are sort of four eyes with one brain, you know, fused together, the two brains fused together, you develop a chemistry. And I think a lot of that chemistry comes from knowing one another's cadence, one another's rhythm. And that's what brings a great rhythm to a show. Spencer is an incredibly talented guy that's far deeper in thought than I'll ever be. He's 9 years my junior. I feel as though he's not only my age, but maybe a little older when it comes to life wisdom. And, but together while we're on the air, man, we are having the time of our lives. I mean, we're really having fun. And I think that most people, not all, but most people really enjoy, listening to people that they know are enjoying themselves while they're doing whatever they're doing. So many people don't, you know, and, it stands out to people when they see people that really do enjoy one another's company. And a lot of that has to do with, just as you said, rhythm. And there's rhythm to a golf swing. There's rhythm to a broadcast, you know. And I think we've got it. I do.
Can you stick around for one more segment? And we'll actually talk about some college football. But I love talking to you about your background. And I so enjoy getting the secrets of very successful people, and this has been very enlightening. Can you stick around, Timmy?
Yeah.
All right, great. All right, listening to Big Noon Sports. We'll be right back.
Join Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. Just a small chance of a shower this afternoon, otherwise partially sunny, the high 85. Tonight fair with a low at 66. For tomorrow and Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds both days with scattered showers around. Highs between 84 and 87. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 78 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
All right, welcome back in. We're talking to Tim Brando. All right, Tim, let's start with Alabama, Texas. Your big takeaways from that game and, you know, the national narrative that has emerged is that the dynasty is almost officially over in Tuscaloosa.
That's completely wrong. I mean, it is completely wrong. I was more impressed with Texas than I was depressed with Alabama. I thought Texas physically handled them. I understand why there's concern, Lars, especially among that fan base. And knowing as much as I do about the fan base, I'm not surprised. And by the way, it's no different, really. Only it's enhanced a little bit more, I think, maybe in Alabama than it is in Louisiana. Louisianians are just as nuts about LSU. And when they lose the way they lost that first game to Florida State, I mean, they're ready to jump off the Mississippi River Bridge. And that's just the nature of the beast. Alabama fans, I think, are even worse when it comes to that. And that isn't, I'm not speaking disparagingly. I'm just pointing out there's that much passion. There's that much, that they expect all the time, regardless. And they're angry and they feel that they have been wronged. I mean, they get that seriously. So you hear that, and I'll go ahead and give him a little pop here. I mean, Paul has a show on that is pretty much 75%, 80% Alabama based in calls, and when they're angry, the world gets to hear it. And I think sometimes a lot of media that are maybe just sort of driving by and maybe listening to that show on the SEC network, they sort of run with it to some extent, knowing how upset the fan base is. The real truth about this team is that it just simply was not going to be as good as it's been in past years because of the mission critical position. You know, you've had a tremendous run of quarterbacks there. I mean, a tremendous run. And now you're asking an offense to be as dynamic as it's been in the past with, by and large, a one-dimensional running quarterback, Milroe. He's very talented at what he does, but he has not developed into suddenly a great drop-back passer, which was much of what we were seeing in that game. I was a little surprised that they didn't roll him out more, that they didn't use him as both a run-pass threat more in the offense. So if someone wants to be critical of the direction of the offense, I can see that to some extent because he's simply, you know, not ready to do exactly that. But to some extent, people just have to come to terms with the fact, and I think maybe even Nick Saban has to answer at some point. Somebody has the courage to ask him. I did notice today, I was taking my shower, and I noticed he was on with McAfee today, and he's going to be a regular, according to Pat, on his show. I wonder if the question will ever come. I didn't hear it today. If the question will ever come, Nick, do you think you made a mistake not going back into the transfer portal a little bit more quickly this year? Because he clearly dropped the ball there. If what we were told and what was reported is true, that Drake May turned him down and they were coming with some serious NIL money, he should have gone back in and gone and gotten some of these guys that we see, like the kid, for instance, at Duke, who's an outstanding quarterback and has clearly the first skill that he has is running, but he's also developing a pretty good skill set at throwing the ball. That hasn't happened yet. And if Buckner was all he was able to get, and Buckner couldn't start at Notre Dame, he obviously didn't start the first part of the season at Alabama. I think we may see him some this week at South Florida, but that's the issue here. The defense is not bad. I mean, I thought they played pretty well against a Texas offense with a lot of skill. You know, their receiving core is outstanding, and Ewers is one of the top quarterbacks in the country, so I thought they hung in there pretty good. I was surprised that Texas was the more physical team up front. That was startling to me, that their defensive line just trashed Alabama's offensive line in the passing game. Milroe was under duress the whole game. And I thought his escapability kind of kept Alabama in it. But trashing that kid and trashing the entire team, though, no, I think Alabama played a heck of a football team, one that I really undervalued coming in. I was wrong about Texas, just as I was wrong about USC. I think USC's got a much better defense. I think Texas has a much better defense. We'll see if they can hold it together. You know, how does Sark handle some success? How does his team handle a full cup of success? We'll see. But I have no doubt that Alabama is still fine, and I don't see Nick leaving anytime soon. But at some point he's got to answer a few critics. You know, this notion that every time he comes on, he's got to be called the GOAT 10 times by the interviewer for him to be satisfied to answer questions. I mean, that's a bit much. I think people ought to be able to ask some tough questions. When he gets some of them, locally, he's not nearly as happy with a smile on his face as he was today with McAfee. Although I don't know, maybe he's getting a check from Pat. You never know.
Yeah, I thought that was an odd decision to go on and be a regular guest, have a weekly appearance on McAfee's show. But then you get inside of Nick Saban's brain, and every decision is made for what? Recruiting. And so perhaps he can reach a younger audience.
Well, it's a little like Joe Biden, right, going on with you know, the guy on CBS at late night, or Jimmy Kimmel. You know what I mean? I mean, that's where their people want to put him so he can be protected in a younger audience, which they're hoping to win with. I mean, it's the same kind of decision. It's a political decision for someone that is considered the greatest of all time. And Nick is worthy of that. I'm not saying he's not. But week to week, you know, he's got to answer the bell just like any other head football coach.
Let's just kind of go around the country. ACC is Florida State clearly the class of that league right now.
Looks that way, but I mean I'm holding out on Duke here. Hey, that might be a fun matchup. I mean, well, I think about Clemson. We can be critical of Nick not going to the portal some. But, I mean, Dabo Sweeney hasn't gone there at all. And Dabo was, I think you could say, after Deshaun Watson pulled off that win against Alabama in their return engagement in the national championship, Dabo was, you know, he was the Deion Sanders of that season and seasons that followed that. You know, he created a culture of fun, you know, at Clemson. Well, now, you know, that has worn a bit thin. And even though you recruit well and, you know, and he does recruit well, he hasn't recruited like Georgia. Kirby Smart can afford to build from within and go nothing with nothing but high school players that are 4 and 5 stars because he's proven he can win that way and that he's constantly developing the talent, Lars. But Dabo just saying no to the portal altogether, man, that is a mistake. You know, they've had issues at quarterback too. You know, that's obvious.
You know, I wrote a book on Dabo Swinney called Dabo's World, and I didn't see this coming. What do you think are the main issues with Clemson right now?
Well, that's the primary one, that they need to understand that no matter how good you may think you are from season to season in the world of the portal and NIL, and they've got a good NIL program. They've got a great one, okay? There's no reason not to at least look in the portal from time to time. I just think it's a little old school, and Dabo, I'm sure, I mean, you know him as well as I do, maybe better. You wrote a book on him. I think he fashions himself as a purist, but a CEO football coach. So he needs his offensive and defensive coordinator to be right in lockstep with him. He's made some changes there too. Okay. And on both sides of the ball. And, when you make those changes, then your player development, can suffer to some extent. I think that's happened a little bit with Alabama, because of all the changes in coordinators that they've had. Dabo's now going through that really for the first time in his career, after having, you know, a group of guys that have been with him on both sides of the ball for a long, long time. And he was paying them very well, and they were obligated to him, and they loved working there. He still has a fun environment. I mean, he still has a culture of positivity. But I think that until you're recruiting with the top recruiting class like Georgia every year, I still think you have to be able to go into the transfer portal. Clemson doesn't have enough big games to play in the ACC to capture the imagination also of the country every week. Okay, much more, I mean, less room for error for him. Okay, you drop a game like that one to Duke, and, you know, the hill you got to climb is a lot longer and steeper than the one Alabama has to climb playing in the SEC.
Let's shift over to the Big Ten. One team that's caught my eye is Penn State. Just your thoughts on how you think the Big Ten is going to shake out based on what you've seen so far.
Well, we'll know a lot more about where Penn State is this week. That's a big noon game that they have with Illinois. Now, Illinois spit the bit at Kansas. That's a good Kansas team. You don't want to play them in Lawrence. I mean, they were America's darling for the first 6 weeks last year, and I think that they may still be surprising people this year. But Bielema does have a good team, and that game's in Champaign. Their fan base is pumped up. Penn State will have to bring it in this game, but Drew Aller is an outstanding quarterback. They've been waiting with bated breath for him to take over, and now with this opportunity and a national television audience, we'll find out a lot more about them. Talent-wise, they don't have as many skilled players as Ohio State, but I do think they have more than Michigan. And Penn State does get a break in terms of the scheduling in the Big Ten. You know, they're not having to play both Ohio State and Michigan in most years with the new scheduling that they have in that conference, with the divisions going away as of the end of this year. I think they're a legitimate top 7-8 team in my mind. I mean, we just have to see them play against better teams. You know, Lars, neither Georgia or Michigan have played anybody, but they haven't done anything to warrant dropping them in your top 10. I dropped Ohio State all the way out of my top 10. I don't even have them in my just out category because they're having problems at quarterback. You know, Ryan Day, when they go into Notre Dame week after Saturday, Saturday week, that could be a humbling experience for the Buckeyes. I'm very worried about them. I think Michigan and Georgia, you know, are still fine, and we have not seen them struggle really. Although I think some in Georgia would tell you their quarterback has not shown it yet. Beck has not been all that just yet, but they're so good in other areas that it picks them up to some extent. But I think Penn State may surpass Ohio State this year in the Big Ten, and they may be the stiffest challenge to Michigan.
Moving over to the Pac-12, this is the last year.
What a great league, huh?
At the top to bottom, isn't the Pac-12 the deepest conference in the nation?
Right now. Yeah, absolutely. And not only is it the deepest conference in the nation, before they begin tantalizing each other, which they will in a couple of weeks, you know, when USC plays Colorado and Colorado has to go to Oregon, you know, Oregon State gets a dose of some of the other teams that are at the top of their league. Washington State is now beating Wisconsin at home, which captured the imagination of a lot of people. I think that the league, not only is the league more balanced top to bottom than any league, but it's also got more teams playing at a high level right now. You know, I mentioned Wazoo, Oregon. You know, Oregon's been on the road to Texas Tech and come out of there a winner. That was important. Texas Tech is good. They may be the best 0-2 team in the country, and some Big 12 teams are going to find that out when they play them, including Texas. Texas has to go to Lubbock this year. But, I mean, that league is really playing at a very high level. You know, and the SEC, we don't know really how good the top teams are because they haven't played anybody. But the rest of the league, we're just not sure about. You know, there could be some teams that are slipping mightily here. And so the SEC crown is still on top, but it may be a little wobbly. You know what I mean? Pac-12, it's ironic, too, when you think about it, that the Pac-12, with all this negative publicity off the field that has led them to imploding as a conference, to have their best year in, you know, a long, long time.
Staying in the Pac-12 just for one second, I want to talk about a former or young player who grew up here in Alabama, and that's Bo Nix. I did a long story on Bo when he was a freshman at Auburn, and I think the world of him. Obviously, didn't work out at Auburn. I think the reasons are complicated. But do you think Bo Nix is an NFL starting quarterback quality kind of player?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Had to go to Oregon to stabilize his life and his football fortunes, I think. You know, the noise was just so loud at Auburn. It always is. And I think a lot of times it's due to the sonic booms heard from Tuscaloosa to Auburn and vice versa. I've never seen two programs impact the other in the same state more than those two do on a daily basis. And that had a lot to do, I think, with the upheaval that was taking place and the need to get Gus the hell out of there. And I think just as Gus Malzahn needed to get the hell out, Bo Nix did too. He got to Oregon. I had him a couple of times last year, as you know, and I look forward to having him again this year because he's so content with what he's doing. And, you know, having Dillingham with him in that first season before Kenny got that job at Arizona State, which, by the way, I really look forward to seeing him next week in that Saturday game with USC. But they have replaced him beautifully. Lanning has done a great job with that program, and I think Bo loves the college town that is Eugene, and he's getting all the perks, but he doesn't have to live in that same sort of fishbowl that he was living in Auburn. The town of Eugene, its makeup, and again, not politically, but its makeup, the actual infrastructure of Eugene, Oregon, is very similar to Auburn, and I think he's quite comfortable there.
Okay, finally, let's circle back to Texas. is the Big 12 kind of theirs for the taking? Do you see Texas right now as a program, as a team that can make it to the college football playoffs?
Well, that's certainly going to be the national narrative, because when you go into Tuscaloosa and win, I mean, you know, the last, by the way, the last non-conference team, I think I may have mentioned this on your show last week, was to beat Alabama at Alabama. Do you remember that one?
Louisiana.
Last non-conference team, Monroe, that's right.
Yeah.
Charlie Weatherby in Nick's first year, 2007. But when Manziel did it, we saw what happened there, right? He went on to win the Heisman Trophy. And everybody in Texas is saying the same thing now about Texas and about yours. And so that's going to be the national narrative, no doubt about it. But, again, I just believe TCU, who I believe you'll see begin to right the ship. They play at Houston on Saturday. That's where I'm headed. Spencer and I will have that game in prime time. I think TCU with Chandler Morris. I think Kansas State with Will Howard may have something to say about that with Texas. You better learn how to run with a full cup of success if you're the Longhorns. In the past, when they've said they were back, they've all said it, okay, they've all said it.
Yeah.
They really weren't back. Now they got to prove it. They have four games left on the road in Texas. Three of them are road games. They only have one road game in the Big 12, not in Texas. The other three are, and those people are loaded for bear, and the Horns have a target on their back.
Well, Tim, thanks so much. Great insight, and look forward to talking to you next week. Safe travels, calling your games, and like I said, look forward to talking to you next week. Really appreciate it, Tim.
You got it. All the best. Give my best to Mr. Coulter.
Yeah.
Take care.
All right. Thank you. That's Tim Brando. All right. We're going to be right back. This is Big Noon Sports.
To win.
Ball game, Alabama wins.
Built for championships.
Heading for the pylon. Get the race. Wins the race. Touchdown, Alabama.
Built by Bama. Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide head to Tampa to take on South Florida. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner, too.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Welcome back in to Big Noon Sports on this September 14th, 2023. Guys, for Eric, he lives in D.C., and it's an amazing thing when your big brother is your best friend, and I so cherish our relationship. So happy birthday, Eric. All right, joining us now is the owner of R&R Cigars, Reagan Starner. R&R is my favorite place in Tuscaloosa to hang out, located at 2703 6th Street, and go in there and get a great cigar, get a great drink. Reagan, how you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good. All right, so last week, you beat Matt and I. Matt was a big 0-4 against the spread. I was 1-3, and you eked out 2-2. So for the year, through 2 weeks, we are all 4-4. And so you got a little bit of momentum going. So let's get into the picks and your analysis of four college football games. All right. Let's start with, Tennessee at Florida. Tennessee is a 6.5 point favorite. Matt took Tennessee. Your thoughts on this game, Reagan?
This one actually really intrigues me. I'm really intrigued by a lot of things right now in college football. This COVID year has me have some thoughts about a lot of things. Tennessee is like, Tennessee's team's like ancient. Like every player on their starter is like a redshirt senior. So I want to take Tennessee because they're like old, and they're playing against, you know, not Florida's team's not old. I think that makes a difference. But, and I've done this before, but I don't like Billy Napier, but I do believe that Florida will beat Tennessee. So I'm going to go.
You think Florida's going to beat them straight up?
I don't know. It's a huge game for Billy Napier and the Florida Gators. And I have a sneaking suspicion that Florida beats Tennessee. I mean, Florida has beaten Tennessee kind of like the way that we beat Tennessee. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, but I think it'll be closer than the six. So I'll take Florida in point.
Do you think Billy Napier is going to be the long-term answer in Florida?
No, I think Billy Napier probably, I think there's a really high, I mean, if he loses Saturday, I think there's a real high likelihood Billy Napier's gone by the end of the year. I don't think he'll be there by the end of this season, let alone next season.
You know, the obvious pick here to me seems to be Tennessee. But usually when the pick is so obvious, you got to go in the other direction. So I'm going with you. I'm going Florida. This game is really intriguing to me, mainly because of the spread. And that is Georgia hosting South Carolina. Georgia is a 27.5-point home favorite over South Carolina, the Gamecocks. Your thoughts?
27.5 is a lot. I don't know. I'm going to go dog on this one too. 27.5 a lot. I think South Carolina can score. Remains to be seen whether Georgia can score. You know, this is one of the only tough games on Georgia's schedule. I probably shouldn't, but South Carolina and the 27.5 points.
You know, I'm going with you. I'm good buddies with Shane Beamer. I think South Carolina's quarterback has just been running for his life, Spencer Rattler, but yet he's still playing at a pretty high level. He's going to get pressured again. You know, but if South Carolina can just score 14 points, it's going to make Georgia's task to cover this spread pretty tough. So all three of us, I hate it when all three of us are taking the same team, but all three of us are going South Carolina. Okay, before we get to the Bama game, let's do LSU at Mississippi State. LSU is a 9.5-point favorite on the road.
Yeah, this one's another weird one for me. You either believe that LSU is the team people thought they were before the Florida State game, or you don't think LSU is very good because they lost to Florida State. I think that LSU is actually probably a pretty good team. I think people are sick and don't want to admit that that the better teams in college football this year lie outside of the Southeastern Conference, and Florida State is one of them. But I do believe LSU is going to be a tough SEC team in a very down year for the SEC. So I'm going to take LSU versus Mississippi State.
Yeah, I'm there with you too. I think there's been an overreaction against LSU because that Florida State game, you look at it at halftime, it was anybody's game to win. And LSU absolutely just played terrible in the second half, no doubt about it. But things didn't go nothing went their way. And in college football, it seems like there's a snowball effect. And so I'm LSU as well. So that all three of us are on LSU minus 9.5. Okay, let's go. And I do want to get after this pick. I want to go to the NFL game tonight just to give you a little heads up, Reagan. I know we didn't talk about this before the show, but Eagles hosting the Vikings, and Eagles are 6.5-point favorites. But let's go to Bama at South Florida. The spread is Alabama minus 33. So Alabama's a 33-point favorite. Can Alabama cover that?
Oh, well, I think obviously the answer to the question is they can. But I'm going to be honest. I'm pretty nervous about the offense right now. There was a lot of things on Saturday's game that were just like, did we run the ball out of anything other than the shotgun last week? I don't think that's kind of a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, we talked about the Middle Tennessee State game and we were saying, oh, the offense, you know, we hope the offense is vanilla against Middle Tennessee State. The offense was very vanilla against them, and we were like, okay, good. They didn't show anything. And then it was the same exact offense we ran against Middle Tennessee versus Texas, and I was shocked because I was like, well, you know, here I was thinking that we were not tipping our hand about what we were going to do on offense, and we literally ran the same exact offense two games in a row. So that was weird. Why you don't run the speed option with a quarterback that runs a 4.4 40? I don't know why. I don't want to see a new quarterback play. I don't want to see. I'm fine with Milroe. I think Milroe can be good. Whatever they're doing on offense, I don't think it matters what quarterback you put in. You know, why didn't Justice Haynes, I have so many questions about that game Saturday. Why didn't Justice Haynes get to play? You know, where were the jumbo steps? You know, if you're struggling in pass protection, bring an extra guy to the line so you're not, you know, just running five offensive linemen that are a sieve out there. If you're having snapping problems, why don't you move the quarterback under center? I mean, just some weird stuff, right? And it's like, I don't know that we have an answer for any of those. I hope they address it. I hope they fix it. But, you know, if the play calling doesn't change on offense, then we're in trouble. You know, I'd really like for our defense to start getting, or, you know, for our defense to start generating some holding calls. That would be cool. You know, I saw their left tackle for Texas was hooking our edge rushers every play. I don't know. And I don't know how you overcome that, you know, other than, I guess, go down and put your hands up like a soccer player. But, you know, maybe that's what they need to do. I don't know. Long story short, I still believe in the talent of this team. I still believe in Nick Saban. I'm going to take Alabama to cover the spread this weekend.
All right. Well, just because you and Matt took Alabama, I'm going to take South Florida. Maybe a cheap late touchdown allows them to cover. Clearly, Alabama is going to dominate this game. Middle Tennessee State is a better team than South Florida. So on paper, the spread should be bigger to me, and I'm not sure why it isn't. So that tells me maybe Vegas knows something that we don't. All right, real quick, just tonight, who do you like? Vikings, Eagles. Eagles 6.5-point favorite.
I like the Eagles. Jalen Hurts, you know, I like Jalen Hurts, man. I hope I have friends on the Eagles staff. If I wasn't a Bucs fan, I'd probably be an Eagles fan just because of all the guys I know up in Philly. So I like Jalen Hurts to shut people up for another week tonight. So I'll take the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Hey, Reagan, tell us, what's the latest going on at R&R?
Well, it's the bye week, or it's the away week, so it's nice and quiet around Tuscaloosa this week. So great chance to come down to the mansion, and I've been tweaking our cocktails a little bit. I've been working on our old fashioned, and I've got some new recipes that I've been cooking up. So our cocktail menus, we got some new cocktails on there. I just launched the liquid crack cocktail. That's awesome. And I'm very excited about it. And it's a Cuban coffee drink, and I call it liquid crack because if you know Cuban coffee, it is literally crack. So come on down, try some of these new cocktails, and watch the NFL tonight, watch college this weekend, whatever you want to do. We got Sunday tickets, so it'll be a fun weekend no matter what.
So much fun hanging out on the porch, having a cigar, having a cocktail, and just chilling. My favorite place in Tuscaloosa. Reagan, thank you so much. Hopefully I'll see you tomorrow. All right, you're listening to Big News Sports. We'll be right back.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Hey, everybody. Coming up Friday on the Gary Harris Show. It's the TGIF edition. You know what that means. A lot of fun, including our Alabama football trivia contest. We'll be giving away another great prize from T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. My SEC point spread predictions. Plus, Adam Amin, Brett Pritchard with the Auburn Report, and more. We'll have a lot of fun.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
If you're a Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Just a small chance of a shower this afternoon, otherwise partially sunny, the high 85. Tonight fair with a low at 66. For tomorrow and Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds both days with scattered showers around. Highs between 84 and 87. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 77 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
All right, welcome back in to Big Noon Sports. Big thanks to Tim Brando for spending a half hour talking to us about his career and as a kid traveling around in a van with his dad, going to different musical events. And just want to remind everybody that tomorrow we will be broadcasting live from Innisfree in Tuscaloosa from 12 to 2. Love to have anyone and everyone come down and just come and say hi, and you know, who knows, maybe we'll put you on air and give us your analysis of the state of Alabama football. Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker who graciously supports this program, she is going to be co-hosting as well, just like she does every Friday down at Innisfree. All right, thanks to everybody, my partner Matt Coulter, behind the glass Justin, and everyone at Tide 100.9, our affiliates Gadsden and Aniston, Walt Williams, who is the straw that stirs the drink. We will see you tomorrow. Everybody be safe.
Looking for a place to watch